Welcome to Comics.
Episode 205. This week, we talk about sex criminals. Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes. See what we're reading next. Send us a message. Or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics.
And now, the cast.
Like a big explosion. Good thing he can't hear it. It would have hurt his ears.
No, Andy, he's blind.
Oh, his eyes. Yeah, that's right. Sorry. It did hurt his ears.
That's Hawkeye. I don't know why I just find that so amusing.
What?
I don't know why. I'm just, like, cracking up because Andy messed that up, and I don't know why it's so funny to me.
Oh, I thought you said something about Hawkeye.
Hawkeye's deaf. In
is
his
he?
One ear.
Is he?
He's like deaf in his left ear.
Yeah.
Oh.
His name? In the Marvel Universe, Hawkeye.
Yeah, I know who Hawkeye is.
So it's not Hawk Guy, it's Hawkeye.
Yeah, I know. Guy is like Earth 17 hippie Hawkman.
Yeah. So you know what? This Daredevil trailer, It's okay. You know what, though? But what I was really excited about was maybe they'll do, like, with their TV universe, what DC is doing with theirs, and use it as, like, a playground for introducing other characters. Because Daredevil, I don't really care that much about, but I would love to see, like, the heroes for hire show up.
Well, so here's the thing, right?
Like,
you know Electra. You know what shows they're making, right, Andy? You know they're making 4 shows, right?
No. All I know is Daredevil, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and Agent Carter. Those are the only 3 I know of.
No, so Netflix is making Daredevil.
Okay.
You know this is on Netflix only, right?
Yeah, which I think
so
is awesome.
So Netflix is making Daredevil, Luke Cage, and Jessica Jones.
Yay! I didn't know about that.
I forget what the fourth show is going to be, a combination of the 3, so I'm assuming it's going to be Heroes for Hire.
Oh my god. Okay, now I am excited.
You didn't know that?
No.
Jeez, Andy.
I didn't know that.
Keep up with your nerd news.
Dude.
I'm really disappointed in you.
Okay. Seriously, though, you're saying that jokingly, but, like, the last 2 weeks, I have felt so much nerd anxiety. Do you know what I'm talking about? No, just, like, there's so many awesome
games. There's too
games.
Much pressure?
No, well, there's so many, like, awesome games, awesome comic books, awesome TV shows, awesome movies, and, like, there's this, I have to watch it all, and there's not time in the day, and I want to do it all, I want to play it all, I want to, like, just this, I want to do
it. I know exactly how you feel.
Yeah.
Like, so Marvel, so they did, if you look at the covers of the Avengers comics right now, it says, like, 6 months until it all ends or something like that. Because Marvel's doing this thing where they're going to, like, basically, they're making a new Secret Wars comic. Uh-huh. Now, I don't know how much you guys know about Secret Wars. Like, the big thing about Secret Wars was that it was the introduction of Spider-Man's black costume. But I think that's what most people remember it for. But it was kind of like, I've heard other people call it a 12-issue toy commercial. Because apparently there were, like, tie-in action figures and stuff. But basically, the premise behind Secret Wars was that this character called the Beyonder, like, got a bunch of Marvel characters and took them to this place called Battle World.
Oh, yeah.
And then they fought. And stuff happened. So, they're going to make a new Secret Wars comic. I think it comes out in May, maybe? It comes out in the summer. And apparently Marvel is going to do is, like, combine all the Marvel multiverse. And so, you know, it seems kind of, like, very DC-ish. It's very Crisis on Infinite Earths. But the thing is, like, Marvel has kind of been exploring that multiverse thing a lot recently, especially with Jonathan Hickman's Avengers.
And Hickman before in the
in FF.
Fantastic Four, too.
So they're going to combine all of them. And so, you know, like, I haven't been buying comics, but I really want to read Secret Wars.
Yeah, so you know exactly where I'm coming from.
Yeah, like, I even bought the entire, so last year, I think, I was at my local comic book shop, and they were having a sale on back issues, and what they call premium comics, which are like comics that are worth money for, like, not just a normal back issue. And they had Secret Wars number 8, which is the cover where Spider-Man is first wearing his black costume. And the sticker price was like $40, but it was like 50 or 75% off. And I was like, shit, man, I'm going to buy that. And then I was like looking through their long boxes, and they had the complete run of Secret Wars. So I bought the whole thing, all 12 issues. And it was a really good price because they were all like all back issues for 75% off or something. And so that kind of got me hyped for, you know, because of that, I'm kind of hyped that to go read it. And then there's a cover of like, they showed the cover of the new Secret Wars number 2, and it's just like all Thors. Like, it's just all the multiverse Thors. So I'm like excited about this comic and I really want to read it, but there's so much, you know.
And then you're going to find a cool character in there that you want to read their comic, or there's going to be a crossover that you want to read, like...
Yeah, and
it piles and it snowballs, you know?
Yeah. Will I read this? Yeah, I probably will. I think that this is something that Marvel needs to do. Combining, like, getting rid of Ultimates. I think it was good for a while, and now it kind of has gone away. It's kind of run its course.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to combine, that's going to be part of the new Marvel Universe post-Battle World, I guess. You know, and another thing, like, they have this whole Spider-Verse thing going on. I'm sure you guys have seen stuff on the internet about Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
It seems really interesting, and, like, I want to read that too.
There's just too damn much stuff.
Yeah. And I'm, like, behind on The Flash. Like, a new episode of Flash came out yesterday.
Oh, yeah. I haven't watched any of Agent Carter.
I haven't watched any Agent Carter. I've been watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., though.
I think I'm 2 episodes behind on that. I don't know.
So, season 1 is on Netflix. I haven't watched season 2 at all. And so I've just been watching it on season 1 on Netflix. Because I tried watching the show when it was airing, and I just was not that into it.
Yeah, season 1 kind of flanders for a little bit and then gets really good.
So the last episode I watched for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was the one about they're like on a train and there's like a grenade that stops time and then they give Deathlok gets his leg.
Oh yeah, Deathlok. Deathlok's great.
Like, I have a special place in my heart for Deathlok because I love playing the Heroclix figure of Deathlok from Wolverine and the X-Men. But I don't think I've actually ever read a Deathlok comic. But I like the character also because he's Dwayne McDuffie had a big part in creating the character. So.
Yeah, you mentioned Secret Wars and the Beyonder and all of that, and then I remembered we read Beyond by Dwayne McDuffie. Like,
yeah.
Way early on in our show.
So Beyond was kind of a
like a return.
Returns, kind of sequel, spin-off of Secret Wars.
Yeah.
But it came out much later. And that's actually a really nice little...
Yeah, it was a fun read, I remember.
Self-contained mini. So. Yeah.
Anyway, like, I'm really excited for Netflix to be doing Daredevil, because then they have, like, they have the creative freedom to do what they want. They don't have as many rules. And it's also nice for my nerd anxiety, because with Netflix, it's there. And it's all there at once if I want to binge on it. And it's not like on Hulu, where Hulu, like, after 2 months, takes it down. So I have to watch it now, or I won't be able to watch it for a year and a half. And by then, I might not care, and I care now, and I want to watch it now. And, like, all that buildup isn't there for the Netflix stuff. It's great.
Yeah,
like, I watched, like, the first season of Orange is the New Black, which was great. And I'm really excited to watch season 2, but I don't feel any, like, need to get to it now.
Yeah. I watched the first season of that show also, and I still haven't watched the second, and I don't, like you, I don't feel any pressure to watch it. I want to, and I'll get to it when I get to it, but it doesn't have to be right now.
Yeah.
But I do agree with you about the fact that Netflix is doing it, because I feel like the things that I like what I see in the in the Daredevil trailer because it kind of reminds me of the best parts of Arrow. And, you know, when I was thinking about this before the show, I was thinking, oh, you know, it's gritty. And when we talk about gritty on our show, we often refer to it in a negative connotation.
Yeah.
But Daredevil, like Punisher, I feel like should be gritty.
Yeah, he has to. That's
he's a street level guy who fights like gangsters and stuff like Kingpin and ninjas and things like that. So the aesthetic, at least as we see it in the trailer, I think is appropriate. And particularly because Daredevil has appeared in the Marvel's Max imprint. And, you know, that was like a mature reader's version of the Marvel Universe.
That was their gritty imprint.
Yeah. But it wasn't like... Because sometimes they being like comic book publishers, try to make something gritty, but also still feel like kind of make it fit into the rest of the Marvel...
Yeah.
Or not Marvel, but the comics universe, not Marvel in particular, because DC is guilty of this too. But Marvel had, you know, they had Max, and they made comics in there, and the tone of the comics was appropriate. You know, it was consistent, and it was street-level characters like Daredevil and Punisher, and then DC had Vertigo also, which has, like, John Constantine. So, Hellblazer was, like, not a tame comic, or like I have Starman in front of me on the on my desk, and I don't know if you guys have read James Robinson's Starman, but it is pretty. It's got some interesting concepts and stuff in it. You know, it's not like a super kid friendly comic, even though Starman seems like
it sounds kid friendly,
but it's not. But it's a great comic, and I think that when the creators can operate without too much restriction, then they can get the right tone and aesthetic that will do justice to the character. And I feel like Netflix has the wiggle room to do that kind of thing because they're not airing it on TV, and there's no advertisers that need to be satisfied and stuff. It's just Netflix and Marvel making a Daredevil show as they see fit, and so I'm excited for it. Mostly because I want to watch the show because it's more Marvel, it's more comic book entertainment outside of the comic book medium. But then you know this is like this is uncharted territory because. You know, Netflix has done other Netflix originals, but this is their first, like, partnership with Marvel, and, you know, if it succeeds, it'll help help us get these kinds of things in the future. So.
Yeah, and I really do want them to, like, they've done Netflix, like, original ideas and original stuff, and that's great, but I really do want them to, like, branch out into signing agreements and licensing, because, like, I really do want them to greenlight a new Star Trek.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Because Michael Dorn wants to do, like, the Worf-ass Captain Star Trek TV show. He wants to do it. And he's like, if anybody greenlights it, puts in the money, I'll do it. No problem. You know? And, like,
yeah.
A big part of the community for Avatar, The Last Airbender, and Korra, like, they really want a third show. And they know Nickelodeon won't greenlight it, so they're like, how about Netflix? Like, tons of people are turning to Netflix to be like, not only do you do a really good job of giving creators the space that they need, but creators like working with you because you do that.
Yeah, but and Andy, I recently convinced you to watch Clone Wars, the Clone Wars cartoon.
Oh, it's so good.
And I don't know how far into the show you are, but season 5 was done by Netflix because... When the Disney purchase happened, they said, okay, we're going to cancel Clone Wars.
Yeah, and it's through season 6, I think, on Netflix, and I'm like in the middle of the late part of season 5.
I think, okay, maybe it's season 6.
I think it's season 6.
Yeah, that was done completely by Netflix because they were like, hey, you know, I don't know how the conversation got started, but they finished the show that was just going to be left hanging there.
Awesome. Yeah, because season 5, I'm like episode 15 or 16 is season 5, and It's so good. I texted you this morning, David, and it was like, because I watch it on the bus to and from work, and I was like losing my shit when that scene came up. I was like, oh shit, the Emperor's coming there to deal with this personally. You all fucked.
Yeah. And season, the last season is really good. So, yes. We spent a lot more time talking about the Daredevil trailer tonight than I was planning when I put it in the notes.
No, it's fine, because it opens up a bigger discussion, you know?
Yeah.
A bunch of different thoughts. But also, somebody commented on our Facebook and asked a question, and I answered it just, like, from my own perspective, but I thought I'd ask you guys, too. Raymond, our boy Raymond, asked, out of curiosity, where do you all stand on the idea of rebooting a continuity? It was touched on lightly in episode 203, but I couldn't get a feel for your actual perspectives. 203 was when we did Forever Evil.
Yeah. Like
New 52 and stuff. So what do you guys think about rebooting continuity?
I think it has to be done for the right reasons. And I think after seeing the New 52 and how sales went crazy, that there's always a chance in the future people or publishers will reboot for the money. And they are companies. It is their sole responsibility to make money. But they make money by catering to an audience. So when I say the right reasons, I mean that the main driving factor should be saying, look, the current continuity is maybe too cluttered or too contradictory within itself. It should be, or maybe even stale. Like, to say we want to do a fresh take on characters without doing yet another, like, spin-off universe, like, you know, what is it, Marvel?
Ultimates.
Ultimates, yes.
Yeah.
You know, like, Ultimate Galactus is a cloud, and that's, like, their fresh new take. You could just redo that, right?
And I think that's what New 52 was just a stale universe.
Yes, and they were trying to kind of inject some new life into it, and I think the issue is, They did make it a lot more friendly to people coming in, but it felt, there's basically two sides to the argument, right? Like, there are the people who want things to stay the same, and there's, you know, you read comics because you get those characters that you like. And then, you know, there are the people who want something totally fresh, and they kind of went in the middle with it, and it came out a little half-assed. Like, for both sides of it.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, the New 52 ended up not being all that exciting. It was just kind of, like, okay, so we retconned shit, but it's the same old. That's what it felt like to me.
Yeah. What about you, David?
So, like Jen, I agree that it needs to be done for the right reasons. And, as far as the New 52 goes, I think that DC did do it for the right reasons. The problem that I had with DC, even being a regular comic book reader, is the continuity DC's was just a mess. Like, they tried to do it, and I think they succeeded when they did Crisis on Infinite Earths in the 80s. Now, I wasn't reading comics in the 80s because I was a baby. But that
That's
comic...
That's no excuse, David.
I know, I should. Why wasn't I able to read when I came right out of the womb? I thought Crisis on Infinite Earths was really good. But the same thing happened post-Crisis, right? Things got very muddled, and, you know, they had the whole, like, Action Comics. They didn't change the numbering, which meant it was up to, like, 600 or something, and that's very daunting if you're a new reader.
Yeah.
And the, and so the other problem is, like, the other thing they could have done was just started renumbering, which is okay, except that if you're a new reader and you see Superman number one and you pick it up, it's still going to have continuity, right? It's not going to be a clean break. So I think that with New 52, DC did a good job in doing a hard reboot. Now, it wasn't completely true because Green Lantern and Batman kept their continuity, which made sense for Green Lantern because that had kind of...
That had basically been rebooted.
Yeah, when Geoff Johns came on board, he did a good job of rebooting it. And Batman, I'm not sure why they decided to do it with Batman, but I don't think that was such a problem either, because a lot of people were familiar with Batman for other reasons, like the animated series.
Well, and because of Batman's distance from anybody that's not also in the Bat family,
yeah,
there's not a lot of continuity around him, you know?
Yeah. So I think that I'm fine with reboots, but it has to be complete and for the right reasons, like I said before. Since Jen brought up Ultimates, I'll touch on that, what I think of that too. It's my understanding that the point of Ultimates was to give a place for new readers to jump into Marvel. The problem is that it kind of became this weird, like, max. It tried to be kind of more realistic than Marvel already is.
Like a half max.
Yeah, and it was just, like, what I haven't read that much of Ultimates, but what I have read is just not that great. So I'm glad that Marvel is going to get rid of the Ultimate Universe by mashing it into Battle World. if you look it up online,
the two Nick Furies fight to death. Only one will enter real continuity.
Well, so in the 616 universe, there is for the lack of a better term, African American Nick Fury and Old Man Nick Fury.
Are we? Do we know he's African American? He's not like Haitian or Jamaican or
he's a dark
or British American, British African British.
Yeah,
sure.
Just saying.
I don't like the term African American applied to black people.
Yeah, I don't really know.
I know. That's me. That's me nitpicking, and I don't mean to dump.
No,
that on
I kind of agree with you.
I'm
and
just
derail our
you.
Conversation.
I'm always kind of conscious when I say like. I didn't really want to say he's a black Nick Fury.
Huh.
But there
anyway,
is one in the Marvel,
there
and he's like somehow related to the old man. Original Nick Fury.
Yeah.
The Marvel Universe is starting to become a mess, too.
Yeah, and, like, I don't know. I replied to his comment on Facebook and said, you know, I think at this point we're all kind of okay with the idea. But since then, I think I've like, thought about it some more, and I've gone one step further, and I will honestly say I love the idea of rebooting a universe. Do it every year. I don't care. Do it after every major event if you want. I mean, so long as you do it in a way that benefits the world that you're rebooting. I think, like, I don't care about your motives. If you want to do a reboot every year to get a money grab, fine. Whatever your motivation is, whatever. But, like, I've read Spider-Man. I've read Superman. If I want to read a Superman story just to read Superman punching a guy, I've got 700 issues of that. So if so if you have a new Superman idea that has to come from new continuity or has to come from a reboot of the character, fuck it, do it. I don't care. Start with a new number one. That's great. The problem is that most of the time we don't get that. Most of the time we get, I didn't like this one little thing about this character, so I'm going to go back. Like, okay, I get that we have four Batgirls now, but the real Batgirl is Barbara Gordon, because that's the one I grew up with, so why don't we redo continuity so that now Barbara Gordon is the only Batgirl, none of the other ones ever existed. And it's like, yeah, but you could tell the story with another new Batgirl if you want, who's like Barbara Gordon on steroids. If that's what you really, really want in your head, do that. Like, that's okay. Rather than going back and saying Cassandra Cain never existed and Stephanie Brown still isn't even spoiler yet, like, not because it negates those stories, but because it gets rid of the one positive thing in continuity. The positive thing in continuity is that, like, you can be telling a story and two characters can be on the page and they can share a glance and do five words back and forth. And if it calls back to some five-issue story arc that they did together 2 years ago, and you're a faithful reader and you've been reading that whole time, then that's two panels that rewards the reader immensely, you know? And if you can reboot or do something new without throwing that away too, then that's like, that's the holy grail. But for me, what happens is so often you get the New 52, where like, one of the things that really bugged me about the New 52 was when they rebooted, they said, we're going to have a major character be gay. This new major character is going to be gay. And it was like, ooh, who is it? I don't know. And it turned out to be Alan Scott. And that's not too bad, except in the first issue with Alan Scott, Alan Scott's boyfriend dies in a plane crash. His boyfriend becomes a woman in a refrigerator. And then, since then, he's had, there's been no mention of him being gay. Never mind that also during this reboot, you got rid of his gay son. And you got rid of the incredibly positive image of an understanding father with a gay son who grew up with a troubled life. And Alan Scott had no problem with his son's orientation. None at all. He was just like, if that's what makes you happy, son, I don't care. Be happy. Live a good life. You know? And like, you threw the one thing out to bring in the other, but you didn't really bring in the new thing. You just kind of gave it lip service for press during the reboot. And is that editorial? Is that making money? Because it's not, there's no fidelity to your creativity there. You're just kind of throwing it out there, throwing darts at the wall, and it's not what you should want to do it for. You don't, the reader gets nothing new out of that reboot. They don't get anything beneficial out of that. So, like, I'm perfectly fine with you rebooting whatever the fuck. If you want to reboot Wonder Woman and do her origin story all fucking different so you can tell the Wonder Woman story that Brian Azzarello tells, awesome, because that book kicks ass. Do that as much as you fucking want. But if you're going to reboot and make Teen Titans like we read, like, 6 months ago, don't. Just stop. That was thoroughly mediocre.
The thing is, they weren't all going to be hits.
No.
But I think in general, the whole New 52 reboot was a very positive thing for DC.
Yeah, for the company, for sure.
And I think it was for readers, too. Like, here's the thing, and this has come up recently in regards to Disney acquiring Star Wars. You know, if you don't like the new canon, and you are very strongly, you feel very strongly about the old stuff, hey, guess what? It's still there. You can go enjoy it.
Yeah.
It didn't get erased from our collective memories.
Yeah.
So, if you don't like the reboot, go back and read the other stuff.
Yeah.
If you want new stuff, then they're making exactly what you want, because, you know, that's what the reboot is. It's new things with familiar characters. So
I think that then makes it all good. The only time I think it's really a negative, or when you really need to worry about it or get upset about it, is when they take steps backwards in terms of diversity and all that kind of stuff. Like when DC did the New 52 reboot and they got rid of female writers and they got rid of some female artists and they had fewer titles that were female-led, they had fewer diversity throughout their books. It's like, that's a negative. You don't want to do that.
I agree with that.
And I mean, that's, you might be telling great stories with white men written by old white men, and those stories could be awesome, and that's fine. But in terms of this genre and how it presents itself to the world and stereotypes about comic books, you need to be careful with that stuff. You just need to. Because it's important, and if you just ignore it and put in more white men, then you're avoiding a whole issue that's happening right now with comics and young people in our society, and you can't do that. Anyway, you guys ready to go to Cum World?
Yeah, let's do it. Hey, that was...
Let's do it, yeah.
This week's comic.
I was going to say, let's enter the refractory period.
So I had to warn my wife that if she overheard us recording, not to get worried about how much I was talking about, like, orgasms and sex talk and all that kind of shit. And then I remembered that I read this on the bus. And I was like sitting in the corner in the back, like holding it so nobody else could see what was on the page. And the thing is, half of the time, it wasn't even like, there wasn't even anything on the page that was that bad. Half of the time, it's just swirling lights and shit.
Oh, so here's like, I remember I was in a restaurant, not like a fancy restaurant. I was at Del Taco eating lunch. And I was reading tarot on my tablet, and that was like, oh my god, I please don't anyone look over my shoulder. Because that's way worse than this.
You know what, though?
Well, this isn't even bad. Not in the way that tarot is.
And you know why I feel good about, why I don't mind getting caught reading this? Is because if somebody comes up and says, what the fuck are you reading? I can say Sex Criminals by Matt Fraction. Go look it up. And then go look it up, and it's actually a comic that's got good critical acclaim, good reviews. It's not like, what are you reading, tarot? And they go look it up, and like, yeah, that's the kind of smut I was pretty sure you were reading, you filthy pervert.
Except they're not going to look it up. They're just going to be like, you're banned from the restaurant.
You cannot have tacos here again. We're going to close this restaurant because of this dirty shit.
Oh, are you saying that they closed it because I was reading tarot?
No, they closed it because of that apartment building.
Damn it.
You closed the Del Taco, David.
It's always
it was
your
fault.
We can't have Del Taco fries.
The closest Del Taco's... Okay, we're going on
like a fucking
weird...
hour away. No more.
Yeah, it's like 25 miles away.
Yeah.
In either north or south.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to make myself sad. Let's stop talking about Del Taco.
This comic, you know what this comic kind of reminds me of? The Filth. But not shitty.
Not filthy. I want to say...
Not nonsensical.
This comic had, like, a very low amount of sex and criminality.
Yeah.
When it boils down to it.
It's mostly about that fucking guy.
Or fucking that guy.
Yeah.
Except there is not that much fucking.
It's sparkle penis.
God, that was so weird. This comic, or at least this trade, is about, like, starting a relationship. And it's exciting to find out about new people. And then things get weird. Like. Yes.
Yeah. It starts out just being, like, about sexual awakening. And it's actually, you know, like. It's kind of weird to say, but if I had a 16-year-old daughter right now, this wouldn't be the worst thing to hand her. Honestly. I mean, it would be a little bit irresponsible of me as a parent, but if this is a comic that she picked up and read, it'd be like the... Because this comic is about sexual awakening in one way, but the way the narrative's told, it's not really about the sex. It's using sex and sexual awakening to, like, see how little these people actually know about the world they're in and the world that's around them and what they're doing with their lives as a whole. And the way that they kind of use sex to find their place in the world, like, it's a lens that's being used to show how little we teach people and how little we tell people about how to just live in the world and exist as human beings and get along with one another and how we just kind of... As we're raising people, just throwing them out there, saying, go figure it out. And, like, what's the main character's name, the woman?
Susie?
The guy is John. Susie. Yeah. She says, I tried, like, you'd be surprised how much of little use the school library is to learn about sex. Like, she just wants to go and read a fucking, like, anatomy book about this. And she just can't. She has no idea what's going on. I mean, all, like, the time-freezing stuff is set aside. But really, try it sometime. Try going to a public library to learn about sex and figure out how little people want to talk to you. And then her gyno and her mom. Jesus.
I think your geographical location, particularly in the United States, will probably speak to the amount of quality information you can find in the library.
Yeah, but even then, dude, if you're like a 14-year-old girl, even in this area where we live, and you go to the library, especially like your high school library, and ask about it, they're not going to want to say a word.
Well, you're not going to go up to the old blue-haired librarian and be like, what's a penis do?
You might, if you're this girl who tried to talk to her friends that she thought might know about this, and they blew her off, her gyno blew her off, her mom blew her off. Like, well,
see, here's her problem. She had the internet. Her modes of research were not effective.
Oh, I don't.
She just wikied it.
Well, that's what the guy did.
More like Yahoo chat rooms.
The guy was like, I got my 14.4 modem, and I looked up blurry pictures all fucking day. Well, even then, no, because when he tried to do that, the filter came on and blocked the sites.
Well, he was doing it at this library.
Yeah.
So this is the problem, because if you want to learn about porn and sex, don't go to the library. Steal somebody's iPad. That's a good idea.
Go on Reddit.
Oh, God. There's some weird shit on Reddit. I don't know if I go on Reddit right away. Just go to r/boobs and see what's there and then figure it out. Yeah.
You know, if you wanted to learn about why your orgasms stop time... Reddit would be the place to go.
Yeah, well, at the very least, you'd know that you were weird.
There's probably a subreddit about it.
Yeah, you'll find They would have found, like, all those other people really quickly.
I see.
They had just known where to look.
Time stopping orgasm. Let's see what I find. Top result. My girlfriend won't finish. She always stops me.
Aww.
That's kind of sad.
That got depressing.
I feel like there's going to be some tangents in this episode, and I'm going to take us down one right now. I was reading, I think I might have been on Reddit, actually. I saw a quote by Stan Lee, actually, where they asked him about does he think that digital comics will eliminate paper comics? And he was quoted as saying, and I'm going to paraphrase him, actually, that comics are like boobs. They look great on the screen, but are even better in your hand.
That's a good quote. I like that.
Since boobs came up, I thought we would. It reminded me of that.
This comic starts off, like, I was, like, reading the first two or three issues, and I was like, okay, this is not what I was expecting. This is interesting and kind of neat and different and cool, like, just exploring yourself and sexual awakening and all that kind of stuff that really isn't done tastefully in comics. It's done weirdly in comics by Grant Morrison. So it's interesting to see a tasteful take on sexuality in comics. And I was like, cool, good on you, Matt Fraction. I mean, you started off kind of weird with the dead guy getting blown out the building, but all right, fine. And then I was like, this is cool. This isn't too weird. And then we get to, like, issue, like, the last half of issue 3, and there's fucking Kegel Face. And I was like, what the fuck is happening here?
Well, there has to be a villain.
No, I know, but I was like, this isn't that weird. And then I was like, oh, fuck, it is weird.
Well, so why not Kegel Face?
No, there was... Wait, you thought that's when it got weird?
Yeah. Like... I mean, the time-stopping orgasm, I was like, okay, it'll be an allegory for something, or it'll be a storytelling tool or whatever. I was like, even if he wants to keep it artsy-fartsy, like... It's not a normal thing that people do. So if your orgasm stop out there, listeners, go to Reddit. It's a comic book.
No,
roll with it.
We need to rewind. What about Poopin' Johnny?
When he's pooping, like, in the plant?
This dude takes dumps in plants in offices to release his rage.
Jen, I'm sorry. If you could stop time, don't tell me you wouldn't do something a little bit defiant. I mean, that's a little...
I would absolutely not do that.
I mean, that's a little... Well, that's just not your flavor of defiance.
Yeah.
You would do something. He has regular bowels, and just 2 o'clock comes... Goes to the bathroom, rubs one out, and then goes to the plant and defecates.
But you even... Jesus Christ. You even see, like, the janitor. Like, that long-suffering janitor.
Oh, yeah,
what about
that
him?
Poor guy.
You know, there's collateral damage with the plant pooping.
Yes.
But no. You know,
I'm not saying I would do that, but I'm saying I would probably do something.
You know, I want to put it out there. Like, the weirdest thing to me about this comic was the plant thing. Like, it just threw me off so much.
Kegel Face's minions with taser dildos?
No, like, or the fact that they escaped by having, like, a gun vibrator, or the glowing dick, or the fact that he called it Cum World, or the fact that they, like, totally ransacked a porn store. No, it's the plant pooping. Weird.
The plant pooping is, like, the most normal thing on that list for me.
And the porn store is called Cum World.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't, like, super inspired when he came up with it.
Yeah,
but...
and he didn't make it up.
Yeah.
You know what my favorite part of this comic was?
Tell me.
I don't know if it was necessarily my favorite, but, I knew that I was in for something special when I was reading the dedications.
Yes.
Where Matt Fraction said, to anyone, anywhere, at any, literally any time in human history who ever rubbed one out, you are the real heroes. I knew that it was going to be something awesome. And it was. This comic was really good.
And the artist's tribute's pretty good, too. Chip Zdarsky. It's like, fuck, she's right over my shoulder. Why are you sneaking
up on me like
that? My darling
Jessica, wherever you may be. You were behind me. What the fuck?
Did you guys... have the trades with the bonus content
in
the back?
I think so. I bought I bought it on Comixology, so it has all the great the variant covers.
Yeah.
the fourth print run of issue of number one.
Yes.
Which one was
so
that?
So amazing. The That's proud the, parent picture.
Yeah, the one where Chip and where yes. Matt Fraction and Chip Zdarsky are on the cover.
That one's wonderful. Actually, my favorite cover was the like psychedelic one of her in the bathtub. That one was really cool.
The Queen one was pretty funny too. With Kegelface and Rachel and John.
Kegelface. This is such a great name.
It's accurate.
Is she doing Kegels over there right now?
It explained a lot.
I love also how like in like two or three little tiny descriptive scenes I know that character. Like I know like the total like on top of her shit, like bitch mode control mom. Like that is Kegelface. And she just like you know she just like took it upon herself to do this. To police the sex criminals.
Yeah. If there's gonna be a sex police, it's gonna be some angry soccer mom somewhere.
Yeah. Who completely misses the like the hypocritical angle of her being in there too, because how does she get to come world?
Well, her face explains a lot of it. Did you guys have a favorite character?
I mean, there's kind of only two.
Arguably three.
Who's the third? Rach?
Kegelface.
Kegel?
Well, I mean, okay, arguably four, because Rachel, two. And oh my god, her drawings on the bathroom wall. Like, that puts her in the running straight up.
I don't think that was Rach.
Was that, no, that was.
Was it?
No, yeah. I thought that was somebody else.
No. She, like, there's a scene where she's like, it basically says, yes, I'm living with that person now.
Oh, okay.
But it's the same Rachel.
Okay.
So which was your favorite drawing? Was it the blue Bing?
I also love the page of all the rejected stuff at the back.
Yeah. Somebody shrimping the Dutch microwave.
Oh, God. And it's like, you know half of that shit is just somebody dicking around all day on Urban Dictionary making crap up,
so,
and nobody's actually ever done it.
Did you look any of these up on Urban Dictionary?
No.
I don't think any of them are on there.
Well then, time to get to work.
The best part is, like, there's the brimping one, and then Susie says, actually, that one could be kind of awesome.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's like, what's happening in that picture?
I think it was a guy fucking her hair.
Yeah, I mean,
but is that awesome? It's just...
I don't know, maybe she wants her hair fucked.
Some of these. Like, the user agreement? Really? So, I would argue, although Rachel is not my favorite character, that scene puts her in the running.
Yeah, she was pretty good.
What was the porn star's name? Jessica St. Cocaine or something?
Jasmine St. Cocaine.
I think she's my favorite character.
You know what? Honestly, and I really did like how when Rachel was like making the joke, and then there was like the side commentary by Jasmine St. Cocaine, like, don't you fucking judge me for this, bitch. I was getting paid. I gotta make my way in the world. Just because I'm a sex worker doesn't mean I was this and that. I really did like that, because that was my reaction.
What was funny for me is I read it, like, and until that commentary started, I was like, I didn't even think she was judging her for being a porn star. I thought she was just being, like, a jealous girlfriend.
Oh, I don't know. I don't really sense any jealousy with these two.
Well, I don't know. Like, the situation, it made sense there, because he's like, oh, she was the one. You know, and then Susie's like,
And then he's saying that she looks like, that Susie looks like her, too.
Yeah. I think there's some, or Susie feels like there's some degree of comparison there, and she wants to, like, not feel one-upped.
Man,
so she starts getting judgy.
Or she's like the door prize. because John can't have jazz and sync cocaine.
I do like how she later calls herself Suzanne, was it, De Quaalude Handjob?
Yes. The Royal De Quaalude Handjob Nook. Where they're cooking breakfast. Oh, God. There were a lot of those good little moments in here.
So, yeah, we spent a lot. Okay, so there's lots of good moments. But, the story overall, what stood out to you guys? Or, what did you think of it overall?
I want to know if there is a giant bank conspiracy and who the sex police are. Like, I'm really curious as to how much level of conspiracy there is going on. And I think that will keep me reading.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested in reading more about this, more so than I was after we finished Wicked and the Divine. And I thought that was a cool comic. But this, see, what I like about this is there's not really anything else like it. I can't think of anything that compares well, like another comic, I mean. And what's interesting, too, is I think that this could probably be, this story could be successful, and it doesn't have to be a comic. But the fact that it is a comic makes it a little bit more special, too, you know? So, this is just one of those great comics that, I don't know, I can't even think of another comic that is, to me, as original as this one. Because what is this comic really about? Is it a heist comic? Is it about sexual awakening? I mean, there's all kinds of things you could fit into it. And I think what's cool about it is that as a reader, you can enjoy any of those parts of this comic, and it still is a really good comic.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I was kind of rambling there.
No, and you're right. You can really kind of grab onto whatever part of this comic you like, because there is so much in there. And I really am interested in learning about the sex police and all of that. Like the dude who's just a bus driver walking around beating people with a dildo. Like that's hilarious. And I want to know, are they just self-appointed? Because it kind of seems like it. But then they're communicating with somebody else too, so I'm not entirely sure. And I want to know, all of this time-stopping stuff, they're not the only ones. These five, even, are not the only ones. There are more people out there, and that's, a rich world for Matt Fraction to get into already. But, honestly, my favorite panel in this comic was when Rachel was talking about her mom, and Rachel was saying that, when you're in the airplane, they tell you if there's a loss of pressure to put on your mask before you put on your child's. And then it cut to her mom drinking out of the glass. And she had the glass up to her nose, or up to her face, in just the way that it looked like a breather. You know? And I was like, man, I was not expecting, such a, really well-written, well-drawn, poignant little moment in a comic about time-stopping orgasms. there's a whole bunch of stuff in here that's really good. And, they're good writers, too. It's not just fun. There's moments in here that really make you like that is deep and interesting and awesome.
Yeah, this is quality storytelling, regardless of the fact that there is teenage girls drawing sex positions on a bathroom wall. I mean, it's so well written, and it's good on many levels. We've been laughing about a lot of the funny parts so far, but like you just said, Andy, there's these really poignant parts too, because it is about John and Susie. You know, we get their origin stories, to put it in a comic book term, and we see how they arrived at the people that they are, at least in regards to their sexuality. And it's not a, Susie was very alone in hers, and John was very confused, and, neither of them knew where to turn, and they both ended up coming at the situation from different directions. I mean, John was he I mean, he says he wasn't really addicted to porn, but he kind of was. Like, that's where he got his... That's where he learned about these kinds of things,
yeah,
right?
That's where he got his education.
And I feel like these are relatable. These are very relatable things. Like, other people out in the world can think, you know, I had a similar experience, except I couldn't freeze time, but I think, like, going back to what you said earlier, Andy, it's not easy to learn about this kind of thing in a way that is comfortable, right? It's always like this awkward thing that people, some people shame, you know, people get shamed for talking about it, and other people get, you know, it's like hyped up, I guess, is one way to put it. Like, some parts of the media make it seem like it's this thing that if you're not a part of it in the way that celebrities are or famous people, mm-hmm. then you're doing it wrong, right? And that's a really unfair position to put young people in. And the sad truth is that's what the world is like today. Because there isn't any real education. And there's people, you know, like right-wing conservative groups. And no offense to anybody who's conservative, but there's a lot of people want to make it even harder for those kinds of things. Because they think that by not educating their children, they're going to not do these kinds of things. But the truth is they're going to do it because it's like a biological imperative, right?
Yeah.
And it's going to happen, and it's better to be equipped with the right knowledge than to stumble into it and make mistakes.
Yeah, and it's just like...
And some of the mistakes can be deadly, right? I mean, there are diseases out there that can kill you or make you very ill or ill for the rest of your life. There, you can be put into a situation where you are no longer in control of your... person, right? And there's the sad part is that nobody, well, not nobody, but the tools aren't there for the people who do want to educate, right?
Yeah, schools, a lot of people are running out of money. Are a lot like Susie's doctor, gynecologist in this comic. Like, Susie asks, what happens after an orgasm? And like, that's the kind of question, like, if you have a good gynecologist, could be like, well, let me explain to you how that works. I'm going to explain to you how that works, explain to you how that works with your body, and then explain what happens after that, right? Like, a good gynecologist who wants an informed sexual person as a patient will get into that. But this gynecologist in this comic, which I think is probably a good chunk of the country will have people who are like that, will say, like, generally you fall asleep with your husband. And that's just... Like, that's it. That's where the conversation will end, because the gynecologist won't want to explain this to a 14-year-old girl.
And see, the thing, the sad part about that is that's somebody projecting their expectations onto others, and that is not what reality is, you know?
And then that girl just walks out just as confused and frustrated as when she came in, and still looking for answers, and will keep looking in other places. Like, you're right, it's not going to stop that from happening at all. And it's just like John, too, in this comic. Like, he's just going to keep looking for whatever information he can get, you know? And, like, we talk about he might have had a porn addiction, and that's fine, though. But I think, essentially, he came to it the same way that she did. It's just her reaction when time stopped was to use it to do a bunch of other things. And she says, like, what I needed was more data points. Like, she says it that flatly. Like, I just needed more information about orgasms and what was going on with her and her body and, like, time stopping and all of that. And she just needed more information, and there wasn't any. So she started recording it herself, right? And so John was lucky enough to find a storehouse of information and data points about orgasms. And so he just looked, like, he got more data points. Like, he watched everything he fucking could, you know? And, like... they are essentially going at the same problem in the same way, just through different outlets. And it just, they you can tell they were both equally frustrated. Like, he was saying, like, I thought sex were like taxes. It was just something adults had to do. but for some reason they wanted to do it. I don't know. It's confusing. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. My experience growing up was just that nobody talked about it. No, no anything. There's a sex ed class, but the city I grew up in, not in city, the town I grew up in was in the Guinness Book of World Records for most churches per population in the world before we were overtaken by Jerusalem. So my sex education in high school was woefully inaccurate. And most of what I knew from sex for a long time came from porn. So I really empathize with Johnny in this comic. I was like, yeah, that's how boys learn about sex nowadays in the age of the internet. It really, really is.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm fortunate in that I've, at least from what I can remember, I was pretty, I had a pretty decent education. I remember, like, sex education in the broadest term possible started, I think it was, I first got exposure to it in, like, sixth grade. And it was, like, you know, they didn't talk about the mechanics of it, but you know, it was more like, this is a thing, you know, that is going to come up. And then when I was in junior high, my science teachers were really good about, it was part of the curriculum. And so I feel like by the time I was in high school, you know, of course I wasn't like an expert, right? But I wasn't stupid. You know, I had knowledge about what it was. And, you know, I was totally an expert when I was like 15. But yeah, and that's a problem, right? The quality of education, or you can widely vary from absolutely nothing or complete misinformation to actual science based, you know, facts.
I have a distinct memory in my high school sex ed class of a girl saying after like a slide came up, like saying in a state of complete surprise, "Wait, I have three holes?" She was like shocked.
There's an episode in the second season of Orange and the New Black that covers that.
Oh yeah.
Like I kind of have the same like school-wise background as you, David. Like I think there was just something that explained the biology of it, like in what part of the body are babies formed, that kind of thing, in like fifth or sixth grade.
I remember in junior high there was they took all the girls away for a week to teach them about tampons and stuff.
They split them up, and it was weird because it was only like it only talked about anatomy. And what boggles my mind, when I was teaching college classes, here and there, I would run into people who just simply did not know where babies came from. Like, they knew that people could get pregnant, but they didn't really have a good understanding of how. I met a girl who thought babies exited the womb through the belly button.
Oh, God.
Right? Like,
this is college.
Yeah, it's a bit frightening because...
Oh, Jesus.
You kind of expect, you know, a lot of people go on to have children. It must be really, like, even aside from, like, the what happened to your basic, like, human anatomy education question, like, it must be terrifying to have a child if you have no idea how that happens.
How it works.
Right? Yeah. And I don't know, like, the comic does point out a really good issue about how she couldn't go anywhere. And like, I just read last week, I think 1 in 3 children in Mississippi is born to a teen mother. It has the highest rate in America of, you know, teen moms. And they, I think, legally have abstinence-only education. And when you tell people, like, sex is bad, don't have sex, the end. Like, people robbing banks with time-stopping orgasms is not the end result, right? It's,
like, if only.
Yeah.
The one that really stabbed me in the heart, though, was when she tried to ask her mom about it.
Oh, God,
her mom was just, great, so now I'm raising a whore. I'm like, oh, God. Like, that kills you on, like, three or four levels, especially because in this, like, awesome fourth wall storytelling style that Matt Fraction is using, Susie is so empathetic to her mom. Like, she's so forgiving constantly. Like, she's, it'll cut to a panel of her mom, and her mom will just be sitting there drinking in the kitchen table like she always is, and she'll just be like, she was trying so hard. Like, I know, she was trying to hold it together. It was just the alcohol. She just needed, like, just constantly forgiving, forgiving, forgiving. But all we get of the mother is the opposite. Just the intensely brutal stuff. And it's just, it kills you on, like, three or four levels. And that one just, like, you talk about how it's hard for getting information. And that wasn't just about her getting information. That was just like, oh, God, hurts.
Yeah, and I think the darkest part of that exchange was Susie didn't want to have sex. She wanted to know, like, how it worked.
Yeah.
Right? That she wasn't doing anything that even the mom could possibly consider whorish. It was just like, what is sex? What is happening? Does time stop for everybody?
And, like, my sense of time in here is she, like, had just started basically masturbating in a bathtub, like, 4 or 6 months before that. Like, she was not very far into the experience of even exploring her own body at that point. Let alone being a whore. Like, just leaps and bounds away from that accusation. Yeah. This is why I really appreciate this comic, because sex is mentioned in comics a lot. You don't think about it, but it really, really is. Especially in Cape comics, it comes up constantly about people having been together, or you stayed the night, or horrible, horribly decided panels of Catwoman. Like, they're in Cape comics a lot. But it's the same kind of discussion about sex that this comic makes stereotypical. It's the same kind of, like, well, we're going to put it there because it's something everybody and you all know. But really, if you don't know, it doesn't tell you anything. It's the sex or taxes kind of a thing. So then if you're a comic book reader and you delve into more, like, okay, what are comic books about sex, or what comic books have boobs in them? And then you go read The Filth.
Or tarot.
You know, there's no fucking middle ground between sex taxes and freaky shit. Like, and this comic, if nothing else, does a really good job of just having a plain and open discussion that is sane and normal. And I think, except for the time-stopping orgasms, I mean, these two people's experience is pretty typical, I would say, for a lot of kids out there. And it opens a discussion that's difficult to have. It really, really is. And then the comic does a really good job with the fourth wall, and we didn't even talk about that, but, like, and then it's like, okay, we've had the discussion, everybody knows about sex, we're all talking about sex here, cool, let's bring in Kegel Face and the sex release and get shit weird. But at least it waits.
Well, I mean, it's got to establish the characters, right?
Yeah.
I really liked that these first five issues were kind of getting to know the two main characters. But then we got, like, each issue was kind of bookended by the criminals part of the title, right?
Yeah.
I thought the storytelling, the nonlinear storytelling was excellent. And the fourth wall breaking stuff was great, too.
Yeah.
I really liked how they handled the bank robbing, too. Like, when I went into it, I thought that I would be reading a comic about people who did this and were, like, kind of these established criminals. And I like how they just started doing these heists, and the whole time, you know, it's a point of tension in their relationship. And she knows it's wrong. And, like, there are so many things that are just putting her on a moral seesaw about it. Right, it's like she knows it's wrong to steal, but it's for the library, and then she meets a kid who, like, uses the library, and I don't know, like, I didn't expect the heist narrative to be the way it was, but I like it much better the way it is than what I expected.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't have, you know, I wasn't sure what to expect coming into this comic, but, you know, I was very pleasantly surprised.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, I don't really have any way to, no expansion on that point, but I was pleasantly surprised. I thought this was not, I don't know what I expected. I mean, I've read some Matt Fraction stuff. I've read, you know, I've read his Marvel books, and I've read some of his non-Marvel stuff, or his indie comic, I guess you, indie comics. And this is just, I don't know any better way to say it than I was pleasantly surprised by this, and that it's not like anything I've ever read before.
Well,
and not in a weird Grant Morrison way.
Well, we're running kind of long, so I'll go ahead and ask you, what would you rate it?
Okay, I'm going to give this one a... Man, you know, I'm going to give it a 5.
Ooh.
I thought this was a really good, you know, we're this comic is, or this podcast is about comics, right? But like I said before, this is just a great, it's a great story. And it, you know, it's about people freezing time with orgasms. When you explain it like that, it's kind of, it's very ridiculous and funny. But the thing is, like, it's, aside from that, like, the experiences that these two characters go through is realistic and sympathetic, and it's just so well put together. We didn't even talk about the art, but I thought the penciling was really good.
Oh, yeah. Chip Zdarsky is amazing.
The characters are very expressive and, you know... It's not like it's about sex, but it's not hypersexualized like comics like Tarot or Witchblade or even some Cape comics. You know, the people are like normal looking people,
yeah,
right?
Which is important.
Yes, it makes the characters even more sympathetic.
Well, and it makes the discussion about sex more realistic, because if you want to have an open, realistic conversation about sex, and everybody looks like Wonder Woman and Superman, then it's not a realistic discussion of sex.
Right.
They really should look like Matt Fraction and Kelly Sue DeConnick. Then it'll be more realistic. Not that those two are frumpy and normal looking, but you know what I mean.
I don't, Andy. Please clarify.
So what I'm trying to say is I'm going to give this a 4.5. Just transitioning right away. I like, you know, I get the feeling that, like, there's all this narrative, right, in popular culture about, like the perfect romantic moment, time-stopping, you know, like Star Trek Generations, because, of course, I go back to Star Trek for fucking everything, right? When Picard is sitting on a bench with the woman who's the leader of the colony that's trying to get sapped, I don't even remember her name, and they talk about, like, you know, in that special moment, time stops, and, you know, like, Matt Fraction probably had a time-stoppingly good orgasm. Just like, that was so great. I feel like I want time to stop. And then just kind of like, what if it really did? What if time really did stop after that orgasm? And then just kind of snowball from there, you know? And it's kind of take the normal thing and extrapolate it and make it interesting, make it weird. And he did that and had the, like, amazing narrative and the breaking the fourth wall and all that kind of stuff. And he was really good. It was really, really good. I don't know why I'm not giving it a 5. Mostly just because this isn't my kind of thing. And I feel like the first 4 or 5 issues, there's kind of a... There's a balancing act that's kind of weird between the sexual awakening narrative with the time stopping balanced with Kegel Face and the sex police. Like, maybe more sex police earlier in than I kind of know where that's going to be going. But right now it's just like, okay, I was having a really... actually enjoyable time reading about this couple and their exploration of themselves and their relationship, and that was really, really drawing me in, and then Kegel Face is kind of throwing me for a curveball right now. Like, I kind of didn't want Kegel Face, but I know that the entire run of this comic cannot be just about them having sex. There has to be more, you know?
You know, so, I like, feel
maybe
like...
bring it in earlier, I don't know. There's some balancing act there that didn't quite feel right for me, but not like I'm not going to keep reading.
See, I feel like I feel like Kegel Face, there's going to be a lot more to her. There's something that's going to make her sympathetic, but I guess I'll have to read more to find out.
Yep. What about you, Jen?
4.5. I really liked this. I thought that it was well done and very clever. I really liked the narrative of their relationship starting, especially we didn't get to talk about favorite scenes really, but where she's in the pool hall and she's singing Fat Bottom Girl.
Oh, yes. Oh yeah, man, I can't believe I forgot about that.
And I assume that this is in all current published versions, but like the little post-it notes over the lyrics saying how they couldn't get the rights were just like a great way to break the fourth wall. And then it ends with John saying, like, and that's when I knew I loved her. It's just a perfect mix, this comic, of absurdity and kind of fairly touching, like, emotional story mixed with just a bit of, like, heist. And I think that's a great combination. Mm-hmm. You know, for anyone who's been hesitant to read this because of the premise, yes, it's really absurd. And, I mean, you can't really bring it into a Del Taco and just read it out in the open. But I, you know, this comic is more than just sex or criminality. It's sweet and it's clever. So, you know, that sounded like a really good review, and I like the art too, so I'm going to bump it up to a 5.
Yeah, then I'm the only one bringing it down.
Well, you better bring us down, Andy.
Sorry, Matty boy. Look, every year, when we do our best of, Matt Fraction is in it, and I feel like every year he just gets 5s.
Well, he works hard.
I know.
Okay? He works really hard for 5s from us, Andy.
Not that he doesn't deserve them. Not like we're the gods meeting out 5s so stingily. I don't know. This is... I don't know. I will probably end up giving it a 5 after reading Volume 2 and getting more Kegel face. I don't know.
Well, to be fair, you know, to get your back here a little bit, we are only rating Volume 1. So
that's
if Volume 1 is a 4.5, you know,
can only
you're still wrong, but that's your opinion.
All right. So how about Fight Night?
Fight Night, Round 1.
All right, everybody. This week's Fight Night is favorite sexy villain costume. Because sex criminals.
Yeah, so sexy criminal.
Sexy criminals. I'm going to go first because normally I make David go first. My sexy criminal choice is Kraven the Hunter because that motherfucker just wears a loincloth and he is balling out of control with those abs. I mean, plus the other thing, and even not even that incarnation, the one that like wears a jacket, it like wears a jacket of like a cheetah or a tiger or some shit. I don't even remember.
I think it's a lion's head.
Yeah, but the eyes are right over his nipples. So even when he's not rolling with just the loincloth, even when he throws on the jacket, which, by the way, the whole open jacket's still showing the abs and chest kind of thing, it's like eyes right over the nipples. Look here, look here. You can't look him in the eye, even if you want. It's all nipples and loincloth. Kraven the Hunter.
Round 2.
David, how about you?
Man, I just went for the low-hanging fruit with Emma Frost. I mean, what can you... She's basically a walking lingerie commercial. And you don't have to get her a diamond because she is made out of diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
Although, right. I don't know how sexy I think the white lipstick is, but yeah.
You know, I like weird colored lipstick. I'm down for that. That's good.
Round 3.
Galactus.
Oh my god.
So, the reason for this is everyone knows that the most sexy thing that you can be is self-confident. And I don't mean that in, like, the skeezy pickup artist way. I mean that as a person with, like, real true self-confidence. And you cannot wear Galactus's stupid fucking hat without having absolute confidence in who you are and what you're about.
Oh, man, I want to change my answer now.
Plus, do it!
Okay, do it. What'd you change it to, David?
I would change it to Darkseid.
Ooh.
Oh.
Because that dude, just like Jen said, he's wearing a skirt.
And so Darkseid wears a fucking skirt, too.
Darkseid is.
All right, let's vote. Jen, what's your vote?
Darkseid, because, you know, he really...
change it.
He rocks that mini skirt. He rocks it.
My vote is for Galactus, for Jen. Not just because of the balling out of control helmet, but also because Galactus wears a mini skirt as well, except Galactus is like 10 stories tall, so everybody is just looking up his skirt constantly. And he has to make sure the boys are firmly tucked into that Speedo he's wearing under his skirt, or just half of New York City is getting nutshot.
Or maybe he's just so confident that he just goes commando.
Just everybody, half of New York.
He's gonna eat your planet. He's gonna eat the planet.
Oh,
he's gonna give you a show, right? It's a dinner and a show.
I was gonna say I should have fucking picked Dr. Manhattan, but he's not really a villain. Well, I guess he could be a villain. I know. Anyway, David, who's your vote?
I'm gonna go with Galactus as well. That's just perfect. Like I just keep seeing him in his first appearance in Fantastic Four with those sexy legs. I mean, look at those thighs, Galactus. You fine, Galactus.
All right. So I guess the winner then is Jen this week.
Yeah.
Oh, go, man. Jen. All right. Well, let's get the scores.
Jen, 3. David, 2. Andy, 1.
I really have a lot of catching up to do.
You just have to turn up the bullshit as like high as it will go.
I thought I was turning up the bullshit with the lion's eye nipples.
Dude, I was going to vote for Kraven until Jen, she really sold it, man.
She did it with Galactus. Damn, it's my own fault. Oh, I forgot to do it. This week's Fight Night was brought to you by audibletrial.com/welcometocomics. I'm going to do that from now on. I don't think Audible has any idea that they're quote-unquote sponsoring our Fight Night, but if you like Fight Nights, go to audibletrial.com/welcometocomics, get a free audiobook today, and support the show. That's it for this week. Next week, we're reading Ms. Marvel No Normal, written by G. Willow Wilson. And this thing I'm pumped for, because this was on my list, but I didn't pick it for some reason, because I knew we were going to read it eventually, regardless. But then our boy Raymond put it in his listener's choice. He says, why don't you guys read Ms. Marvel? So we're going to do the best of 2014 listener's choice, Ms. Marvel, No Normal, G. Willow Wilson. That's next week. But for this week, that's everything. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Recommend just googling sexy Galactus, because 99% of the pictures are just normal pictures of Galactus.
Well, that just backs you up even more. Galactus being Galactus is sexy. Sexy Galactus.
The first one, though, is the best. It's a Valentine's, and it says, I don't just eat planets, if you know what I mean.